Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of So Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, dear heart. It is our awesome blessing to get to be with everyone who chooses to join us again today. And in particular, we have Dr. Tim and Dr. Dale with us. Dale, it is an honor and a privilege to get to play with you every Friday, although I know we've missed a few recently. We've been pretty intense here with intensives, and actually, Jeannie and I are doing an intensive right now once again as we pack the Bill's room. We speak Sunday in St. Louis, and once we pull out of here, we won't be back for 10 months. So we're in an intensive already. Dr. Tim, welcome. Let's say hello and see how you be.
I'm well. I'm glad we're finally hearing you. We missed all of Jeannie's intro except the words, welcome, Michael.
Oh, wow, none of it came through.
Nope, I was just about to log in and turn myself on the switchboard because I was talking and no response. And I am doing quite well. You might want to mention that today is Friday, September 12th, so we can have that on the recording so people can archive it accurately. And I'm looking forward to hearing from Dale. And listen to an interaction between Michael and Dale, since we've missed that for a while.
Anything in particular on your mind as you turn the show over to Dale and I? And, of course, the questions, we'll be delighted to hear them as things unroll.
Well, the theme has been 9/11, and how actively people's unconscious minds have blocked them from processing that effectively. And some people were bringing that up yesterday at a business meeting. One of our women who gave a presentation had a cousin die in the 9/11 attacks, and I've had a person already today talking about the trauma they had from 9/11 and how they completely blocked it out yesterday. And then they found themselves unable to sleep last night, and the memories of the trauma were surfacing from the unconscious. So that's been the theme, the power of our unconscious mind to block stuff from us and at the same time direct our behavior and paralyze us. Those UTA brain cells, as you talk about so frequently.
Right. And certainly, it's all the more reason for us to be taking this work to every mind, heart, and being on the planet to put an end. No amount of attack, no amount of war is ever going to put an end to war. We've heard that story many times in history about this is going to be the war to end all wars, and the only thing that's going to end war is the active presence of human life and love. So that being the focal point, you know, first law in Aramaic, we just finished doing laws of living, and the first law is that condition in the mind called Brahma, along with its myriad of implications. Dale, maybe that would be a good starting point. What's on your mind today?
Well, speaking of 9/11, you know, that thought that's, and hello, by the way, speaking of 9/11, that observation that's been really clear for me the last few days has just been that justification, I don't know if justification is it, but it's almost like, it's like the pack mentality that we all must suffer, that we're not allowed to move beyond, that we're not allowed to remove those roots of suffering from that experience back in 2011, that we've just got to keep dredging it. We're somehow not honoring those people that died that day if we're not somehow dragging each other and ourselves down deeper and deeper each year into the mud. I understand it. I've got very dear friends that lost, one who lost two-thirds of his family that day. But it reveals so much about our culture in that we band together in the suffering, and it becomes that sort of temporary thing. And then when it actually comes to doing that for healing, all of a sudden, you know, in a lot of ways, we sort of, it's so easy to just push everybody off and say, oh, well, you know, that's your thing. We can suffer together, but if you want to start that healing crap, if you want to believe in that, forget it, you know, get out of here. It's a strange, bizarre, and, you know, even in light of the interesting comments of Ted Nugent, you know, an interesting name you'd never think you'd hear coming out of my mouth in the last few weeks, talking about all these, you know, terrorist attacks that would happen and blah, blah, and pick them off, you know, it just the stuff he said is so graphic, you know, I sure as heck wouldn't repeat it, but of course nothing happened, but I just find it interesting that, you know, here it is, 20 years of me, you know, 20 years in the work that I'm able to recognize that I realize that if I hadn't been through the process of understanding forgiveness and the laws as we're speaking of, I wouldn't even recognize that I was even doing it. I would just be slumbering away. And interesting, though, it becomes like it's almost like banding together in suffering, and that somehow you wear that badge and that makes you a patriot or an American or whatever that may be. I'm all for going, you know, processing those roots of suffering and let's move on, you know. And that's not a forgetting, but it's definitely, you know, the forgiveness of removing the root.
For sure, and it is a challenge for people who have never conceived of such a thing to begin to move in that direction when their whole lives they've been programmed with, you know, vengeance and the violence needs a violent response, never realizing that since we live in an energetic world, a violent response just adds more violence to the package and inspires more of the same. So the forgiveness process being that of going inside of oneself and learning to remove the violent responses so that one creates a different space in their world. There are two chapters of a new book that I started to work on actually several years ago and sort of put it on the shelf because it seemed to be so threatening to people, but people can go and listen to the first two chapters. There are audio files on the website. People can download free MP3s. And the book is called The End of Suffering, Resurrecting the Original Aramaic Yeshua the Christ. And Yeshua starts out, he's talking to a character, much like the wise, is happening to me again book, he's talking to a character, and the character is asking him questions, and Yeshua starts out saying, you realize they killed me twice. First they killed my body, then they killed my teaching. I said, love those who hate you, do good to those who despitefully use you. But wrapped as they were in the commandments of men, they could not hear my words. It's time for my words to be heeded. And that's the starting point. And what's interesting, I was at a writer's conference back a few years ago, and there was a writer's representative there, an agent, and he became very excited when he learned that my self-published book had 80,000 copies in print. He's like, oh, I want to represent your work. And so I sent him those first two chapters, and my reality about it is that they were so threatening for him that he literally would not talk to me. He would not return phone calls. I mean, before that, he was all over me. I want your work. I want to take your book, et cetera, et cetera. And he literally would not receive a call from me, would not return a call to me. And I think it was just too threatening to look at, coming from a background of hostility, fear, and war, to actually look at what do I need to deal with inside myself to change the dynamic and to achieve this condition that was called the first law, which had nothing to do with loving your neighbor, as the Greeks have told us, or loving the Creator, or loving yourself, in fact, had nothing to do with those things, but rather was about the instruction to maintain a condition in your mind where your mind was capable of only producing output based in love when you thought of the Creator, when you thought of neighbor, and that this was a mechanism for maintaining your human life. And of course, our whole work here, the focal point, is the restoration of human life, bringing back to the human form the active presence of love. And our definition of a human life is simple: hold a newborn child. You know exactly what it is, and anybody who's living without one of those has got a problem. And we're here to support people in healing that challenge and bringing forward the truth of our human lives at every turn. Any thoughts in that regard, Dale?
Yeah, you know, it brings up thoughts for me of sort of even looking at it from like a biblical perspective, how, I had shared a few weeks ago about a show I had done maybe a month ago where it was a rabbi who was really so thick and deep in law as, you know, words on a page. And when I was speaking of things like, you know, changing the thought of that traditional Hebraic thought of what neighbor is, meaning just another Jew or the person standing next to you, versus, of course, what Archdeacon Shamoon experienced in the translation of the Kaboris, where it was like, hey, wait a second here, there's something different going on, especially in terms of what Yeshua was trying to teach. And I found that so interesting that the show host, it was an interesting learning experience for me, because he literally said that it wouldn't matter whatsoever what the Aramaic meaning of the words were, because he was quoting, of course, Deuteronomy and Leviticus from the Hebrew, that it wouldn't matter what the Aramaic meant, regardless of Yeshua actually speaking in that language, because he was quoting Hebrew scripture, which was such a puzzling thought to me, because I thought, well, that's an interesting thing. The host was challenging that neighbor meant only another Jew, essentially. And I said, well, that's so interesting. I'm sure that's why, and I've said this on the show before, I'm sure that's why he followed it up with the parable of the Good Samaritan. And I just find it very interesting that I think a lot of the thought that a lot of people have in terms like a lot of old scriptures and what a lot of these meanings may be, they feel that, you know, sort of, I think it's somewhere in the indoctrination process when someone goes to certain institutions and you're basically told that you're upholding some kind of tradition of meaning and that they're trying to keep the meanings on course. But what's so unfortunate is that when someone such as Yeshua takes those meanings that would have been thought of in, obviously, in one way in his time period back then and in his culture, and sort of turned them on their head and made them much more, put much more personal responsibility into it. And, you know, unlocking that neighbor, Carib in Aramaic, was something that was anyone that you thought about. And he was really taking these sort of laws and with a small L, that these man-made things in so many ways, and make much more universal and cosmic and opening, and so much more responsibility there. But somehow in the I don't know what it is. Somehow in the teaching of that, even right up now to modern times, 2,000 years later, it's like it's so easy to wash the Yeshua, like looking at what he was trying to communicate and just swipe that to the side because of that. Again, it's that pack mentality of a religion. It's not much different than the pack mentality of, you know, whatever, that patriotism in America that's going to, like, wave the flag. You know, what was it Sinclair Lewis said? He said, when fascism comes to America, it'll be wrapped in a flag and carrying a cross. Interesting. It's sort of it's in so many ways an American dream. But the thing that's so hopeful to me is that I see that breaking and I see that cracking and I see that as that's falling apart, I see the ones that are really holding on to those sort of stodgy old ways, much as, you know, the older sort of established Jewish mind in the time of Yeshua would have been probably flipping out because lots of things were resonating, and he's taking these teachings that they were told meant one thing and one thing only, and he's turning them on their head, and he's putting a lot more personal responsibility and sort of putting people's hand into the fire and saying, if you don't live it, it doesn't mean anything that you have some kind of definition for it. I feel the same thing's happening in our culture today, that those old patterns of thought that we've become comfortable in because they've been here for so long, we're starting to realize they're not really based in any kind of truth. They're just based in opinions and BS, of course, belief systems. And I see the same thing when I go out teaching, you know, insights from the Yeshua teachings in Aramaic as I do that. It's just fascinating how politics and religion and that sort of strange patriotism have threaded themselves into each other so much to become this hostile, incredibly judgmental monster, so to speak. And I feel so privileged to be able to be in the presence of that and be able to hold that space of love for those ones that obviously aren't able to because they've never even been shown that way. They've just been sort of entrenched in that ideology. And when that ideology is shaken, all of a sudden they look at me and they go, you're the cause, so you must go. Interesting. It's an interesting, fascinating thing to see.
Well, it's definitely time for some of the things that men commanded other men to do to disappear. And one of the ideas that ties in there is the idea of law, and everybody's looking for a rule book. When, in fact, when Yeshua talked about the law, he talked about that we had to come into relationship with something. And the something we had to come into relationship with was the eternal forces, and that the first condition to producing that relationship, as opposed to reading a set of somebody's rules, the first condition was to develop a relationship with the truth of who you are as a human being, as love, and maintain that opening within you for that human life to truly show up. And yet men have this, I mean, it even comes to the Greek, I forget where it is in the Old Testament, but it speaks about fear is a commandment of men. Literally everything in the scriptures based in fear is all men telling their story. And Yeshua comes along with a new story. People want to cling to, no, every word of that book is true. Yeshua comes along and says, I got a new story for you, folks. And it invalidates, if you look at it truly, it absolutely invalidates everything that was said based in fear and hostility. And the invitation to come out of the fear and hostility-based mind and into a truly love-based mind and then come into a comprehension of how the eternal forces of the universe works is a monumental piece of work. That, of course, when you look at it, you know, here are these 12 guys who spend 3 years full-time with Yeshua, and what do 11 out of 12 of them do? They deny him and run away when the stress is up and the chips are down. They didn't get it. They couldn't live it. John hung in there, but the rest didn't get it. And so the rest, you look at what they wrote, and they're writing about hostility and fear. What's John writing about? He's writing about love. He got it. And, you know, it's time for us to get it, that it's about coming from and really, truly restoring that human life to ourselves, to our family system, to our neighbors, our cities, our nations, our world, and bringing forward conversations from true human life rather than a brainwashed, fear-based mind that is totally and completely wrapped in the commandments of men. And, of course, the first tool, if nobody, if anyone on the show has not had access to it yet, you can go to our website. There's all kinds of free support and free information on first century Aramaic forgiveness. And the word forgive is about removal. It's not about letting other people off the hook for what's happening inside of you. If your mind is producing hostility or fear, and you've lost relationship with your human life, with the active presence of love in you, and forgiveness will remove that which binds you to the hostilities and fears of the past. So you can go to the website, whyagain.org, and there's a bullseye in the middle of the page. Just click that bullseye. It will tell you the whole story. There's links to radio shows where we've walked somebody through their full instructions. There's at least a dozen different ones, and we invite you to go to that and start putting the pens and the paper. And it will be strange at first because you're going to have to confront virtually everything you've been taught. And everything that you've been taught based in hostility or fear is a lie. And it isn't until parents start bringing forward with each other and with their children the active presence of love, not discipline, not being properly switched, not being properly beat up, but the word discipline comes from the root disciple, those who are discipled. And, of course, one has to be discipled themselves in the presence of love to be able to disciple their children. If they were discipled in hostility and fear, then they probably pass it on and wonder what happened with their kids. As we wake up to who we are, a different game gets played, and that forgiveness tool is, you know, of course, the reason why I've dedicated my life to it is it's the most important tool there is on the planet.
Yeah, you know, I think that one of those things that I cherish so much in looking at law is what I hadn't realized, of course, until I met you, which that word alrita that Yeshua refers to law in Matthew 22 and Matthai 22 when he says on these two laws hang the law, the arita, and the prophets. And that word arita, aura, of course, is a word that means light. It means an expanding light. And the ta sound would gender that word feminine, which is an attitude. It's a state of being. It's a literal, direct perception, perception of an expanding light. What a different way of realizing that it's not a law written in a book by a man that you live up to, but rather it's that light within your own being that expands when we come from that place, when we come from that natural law. You know, it's the love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your might, essentially, was what Devarim, Deuteronomy 6:5. And then, of course, the love your neighbor as yourself comes from Leviticus. And I find it so fascinating, like I said earlier there, that it's amazing how when we take that sort of a thought or like these, what look like these somehow physical laws, and we, and Yeshua comes forth and says, hold on a second, yeah, they're in a book, yeah, they're, you know, God-given, put it in quotes, but yet if you're not living it, it doesn't matter. It does not matter that you, you know, are, you're living some, living up to something, because the way that I put it, like when I'm speaking of Tuvehun in the beginning of the Beatitudes, is that this is that Uta, this is an innate guidance system. And in Tuvehun, you've got that the A sound, which again genders that word feminine, meaning that it's a state of being. It's like a latent capacity or an innate guidance system that's already there. And that when you choose to live from that Arita, the Tuvehun, the blessedness awakens within you. Blessing isn't something we can give because it's not a physical masculine thing that we can give or do to someone. Blessing is the natural state of our being. It's the natural radiance of the Arita coming through us. And when we come from that, we awaken that within another. When we awaken that expanding light within us, it expands that within them. And if we could just imagine, you know, here's the John Lennon song, but just imagine, you know, that shift, just a subtle shift for even 5 minutes that across the earth, that we could all just agree for 5 minutes to do that, to look for the light. Imagine what could happen. And it is starting to click. It's clicking over. It's clicking over. So many of the younger ones that are coming to my events and, you know, sometimes drugged there by their parents, sometimes dragging their parents there, are just so wide open and awake and alive, and they're living from that natural light. So I'm so excited about the future. And of course, at the same time, it, especially on days like 9/11, you look around and it looks like it seems so easy for so many to just slide back into that heavy judgmental suffering aspect, because they don't realize that there is that. There's the actual true forgiveness that is there, that was given to us, that although it was in so many ways lost, and in so many ways never even seen in the first place, it's still there. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I have to do this. People are like, you know, what drives you? I don't need to be driven. You know, this is why I'm here. This is my natural expanding light. I do this because this is the guidance system is leading me. I don't have to overthink anything. I don't have to worry about the future. I just do it. I'm being lived through. And I'm sure it's the same. Michael couldn't have done this for whatever, 40 years, if this was some sort of an ego trip. It wouldn't. It would have burned out long ago. And I know it's not, because I've been around him for probably half of that time. So it just, I'm excited. I'm excited about the future, even in the midst of what looks like a little bit of a setback. I realize when I look at it as too much of a setback, what I'm doing is buying into that myth as well. So it's that coming from the light, the Alrita, realizing that when I'm open to allow the law to live through me, all that other stuff just kind of, it's almost like bug juice. I mentioned this on a radio show the other day on the Intuitive Angel, a quote from a friend of mine, Jack Grossman, who's, you know, incredibly, he's Jewish, and he's just an amazing guy. He does a lot of artwork with the Hebrew alphabet. But he has this quote he always says. He says, spray on some bug juice, hit the wipers, and keep going. And it's interesting, you know. We're waking up, and the kids are really reflecting that back with us finally. And we've got to stay the course, and we've got to keep doing it. We've got to keep doing it. We've got to keep doing it, and realize that it happens in the little moments in the workplace, you know, on the highway when somebody cuts you off. It happens in the checkout line at Walmart when the person jams their cart in front of you. You know, it's those little moments connected together, those little now moments, that's what's real. It's not about us going off onto a hillside to meditate for 20 years. It's about us being in the culture and doing what we need to do on, you know, in our own little piece of the field to live it in the highest way. And it's just, it's an amazing way to live. I can't imagine going back to the way I used to live. I can't imagine how I survived. I don't know how I lived to be the age of whatever I was when I met you, you know. I don't know how I lived to be that long, because I did some pretty stupid things before that.
Well, you know, it is interesting. You kind of just brought things full circle from where you started with this current comment, and you spoke about love thy neighbor as thyself, how that it's, the words have been interpreted as that. And it's interesting, those who are brought up in fear-based religions, when they come to Heartland the first time, I can spot them from their personal code evaluations. And what their personal code evaluation shows is that they are in major crisis in terms of love for self. You know, there's in the personal code evaluation, there's a scale for love of self and love of others, and that scale is 100, and it's not unusual to have someone who's been brought up in that fear-based religious mind to score in the 12th percentile, 16%, 22%, 30%, which is major, major crisis for somebody. And yet their belief is that I've been taught the truth. And then you look at their love of truth score, and their love of truth score is so far down on the scale as to be, you know, at least as low and sometimes lower than their love of self score. And then you look at their love of others, and it's a travesty and a tragedy. And these are people who spent decades supposedly in the mind of Christ and learning about Christ. And the tragedy in their lives, and you can certainly see why, you know, there are so many people filling our prisons, and, you know, that alcohol and drugs and rage and child abuse, spousal abuse, is just rampant within the community based in fear. And it's such a wake-up call to realize where we are in this culture in regard to this idea of bringing forward the active condition of love
into the mind. And then people block. You know, they don't want to hear, I'm in crisis about this. Don't tell me the truth. I've already been told the truth. And, you know, when you look at their evaluation scores, if this is the truth, make mine vanilla, because this is the profile for ripe and rampant insanity. And once one starts to work with the forgiveness process and start to remove some of that self-deprecation, self-hatred that they've been programmed with, and that belief that there's me and them and there's somebody outside the circle, if they don't believe the way I do, then there's something wrong with them. When they start to work through those issues, then that love of self and that love of others score comes up. One of the most difficult scores to get to come up to the surface or to come up into a decent range is love of truth, because it's been so pounded into them that if you ever catch the lie here, then you're really in trouble. And so one of the things that I see is where people have mistranslated that love thy neighbor as thyself, is that that's what most people who've been trained in that way of thinking are doing. They are loving their neighbors as themselves. Mm-hmm. And they're in such crisis and self-hatred and self-deprecation that violence toward neighbor is, you know, you just need to look at the profile to see that that's what's coming down the pike. It's there. We actually need to stop people from loving their neighbors as themselves, because there is not, in that so-called religiously trained community, love of self. It's almost non-existent. And so to bring back the active presence of love into a mind, not loving self, but rather maintaining one's human life, which is love. And so maintaining this condition in the mind, rakma, this filter, when one thinks of the creator, when one thinks of neighbor, then only intentions and therefore perceptions based in love can come forward, and that opening is there for human life to enter into this human form when one understands how that energy moves within themselves, these eternal forces that are the source of the law, one builds relationship with and comes into that relationship and throws everything that's outside of the realm of that relationship out of their field. Then they can have actual human life and human, true human expression outside of the circle that they've been brainwashed it's okay to do that with. And so it's an interesting dynamic, and as the forgiveness process takes hold, it's powerful to watch how people shift and change and move through into a whole different world. And to you, Texas, we've got a couple of hands up, so shall we entertain a caller? Do you have anything to add before we do bring a caller in, Dale, or Dr.
No, Kim? I mean, that was beautiful. I mean, anything, any thought that popped up, it came out of your mouth, so it was beautiful.
So, Gene, you've got a caller for us. Area code 541, you are on the air. I have a suspicion as to who this might be.
Yes.
Hey there, young lady. Welcome.
Hi. So, hi, Dale. Hi, Jeannie. Hi, Dr.
Hello.
Kim. So, I was getting this sort of visual. When you used the word, Michael, culture, I went to another place of meaning for that, and I thought of in biology and medicine, they have cultures that they have on petri dishes or in petri dishes that they study, you know, to see if they can remedy it somehow. And I was thinking about how the work, the Aramaic forgiveness work, takes us out of the petri dish, and we become the one who is looking through the microscope at it. And, you know, how we actually, by our own cultivation of having love be our experience, we actually can change the results in the Petri dish by observing it from where we now see from love. And so my world, my Petri dish, is really changing quite a lot. And the toxicity of it is intense at times, but bringing light to it and truth to it changes it. So I'm a living experiment. I'm a living process. And I wanted to say that, you know, some of us can do this work. And we know who we are, and so we do. We can, so we do. And I don't think that the whole world's culture is necessarily dependent on everyone doing it. Anyway, I've let go of that as a crusade that everybody has to change. I think it will happen because of the rippling out effect and the nesting energies of, you know, those of us who do the work. And I have an example, and I want to bring good news to everyone that I am a teacher. I teach piano, and the kind of students that are starting to come into my spectrum and my world are amazingly lit up. They are unencumbered by a lot of the culture. They're just so lit up with creativity and love and light, and instantaneously they create songs. And I just feel like there's a whole new integrity and voice coming forth that really is able to communicate, you know, the infinite possibilities. And I'm lucky that I get to teach these kind of kids, and they feel lucky to have me. And so I get to experience myself being loved instead of how I used to not love myself and not have that experience. So the value of doing this work is the experience that I now get to have, regardless of if the whole world is going to get it. And I trust that that's something that is in the charge of Ruka Dakucha and higher energies. So I just make my contributions as they percolate. And sometimes they're awesome, and sometimes they're awesomely challenging, but they're still awesome. That's all I have to say. Someone's on mute.
All right. Yes. I was on mute. That's my old mute balance. So, well, we're glad you're out there doing the work and bringing forward the healing process. One of these days I look forward to hearing about a description of your forgiveness piano concerto that you talked about creating, where you're going to be doing more of taking forgiveness into the musical world. So that'd be pretty awesome to look forward to. And we appreciate your call and appreciate you being on the team.
Thank you, Michael. I'm still working on all that. It has not gone away. It's unfolding. I'll share with you.
Well, I completely hear, too, while you're still here, I completely hear that, you know, I find it interesting that for a while I used to get I was so offended if somebody else, you know, wasn't, if you weren't willing to forgive, I just found it so offensive. What an interesting thing, because all it was doing was telling me I wasn't doing it myself, looking outside for some sort of outside result, which meant I was not removing my own root. I got that after a while, but in the beginning it was like one of those things that I thought, oh, the whole world is clueless and they're dumb and they won't wake up and they refuse to do it. And it's like, okay, Dale, okay, whatever. I woke up to it after a while.
That's interesting. You know, I listen to people interviewed who've written books. Quite often I listen on a radio show, and I just hear how they've got the whole thing wired. They've got the whole description of the problem and the description of the solution, and it makes sense at some sort of level. At some strata, they are a voice and a shining light to you know, a geological strata of that, you know, that which is the composite, I guess, physical reality that we're all sharing. So I'm just starting to let it be okay and amazingly see from my perspective now how I could maybe lift it up even further. So if I encounter someone with those problems, you know, maybe they're drugs and alcohol and they're homeless and who knows what problem. But if I encounter it right in front of me in my life, I have more compassion for them. And also someone has shared a solution at a level that they might be able to find an opening. But then I know that I'm pouring tons of Rupa Dikuccha in because that's the experience I live now. So it's kind of neat. I don't know if that was clear, but that's kind of neat. It's kind of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I realize that now. I was sort of had my thumb over it so I wouldn't cough into the. I'm even muting myself with my own thumb, but I realize a lot of times that. Well, it really doesn't happen as much anymore because once I started recognizing it, it was maybe 10 years ago or so that I would actually feel myself starting to put something new or something would start, not necessarily new, but something that was in there would start resonating if I didn't feel someone was getting it quick enough or they weren't living it the way I was living it. I find it interesting now. I can recognize that as soon as it starts vibrating, as soon as it starts shaking loose, whereas, you know, 15, 20 years ago, it was like I was really almost creating a whole new set of things that was going to have to ultimately be forgiven because I was putting new stuff in, feeling that people weren't figuring it out as much as I had it figured out. And then it became a little more subtle and more gentle, and it sort of started hiding itself in the dark corners and in the shadows of my mind until ultimately I started really getting in there and allowing myself to be open whenever any kind of process was happening, whether it's for me or, you know, working with someone else. And I can now, just by being so hypersensitive and doing so much removal, that as that light starts to burn those things off, I can, like, instantaneously, in most cases, feel that. Maybe in a family situation, it's a little different. That's why I always say that, you know, it's easy for me to be out there. Not easy, but it's different for me to be out there talking in front of 100 or 200 people and being so great at communicating what I'm speaking of, but, you know, I want to see how those people are at home with their children and with their, you know, the family of their birth and things like that, you know. And that, to me, that those are where the remnants, or I'm still doing the forgiveness work, is especially, is in those places that are right there under my nose in my everyday situations, you know, the moment to moment. And that's where the great awakenings are happening, really.
Oh, you have such a big heart. You remind me of Jesus and how he had a flock of people that he was able to shepherd just by teaching and giving love. And so when that's going on, I was just going to say I get so many clues when someone like you says what you say, or Michael does, or callers who call in. That, okay, or Dr. Tim, you know, I can even hear him doing it. He takes breaths. He slows himself down. And sometimes we're just processing energies through us that we don't even have to know who they're for or what they're about necessarily. They're not always personal. And yet we get, at least for me, I'm getting a glimpse of how its resonance is familiar to me. But my willingness to let it go faster, I don't know. It works. You know, like you were saying, it just kind of heats up. The light comes in. It burns it off. It dissolves. I don't have to worry about where it went. I mean, just the fact of even having permission to let something go that doesn't belong.
And that's the magic of it. You know, if it is, even is. That's why I think still point breath work is so powerful, because you really don't, a lot of cases, I have no idea what happened or what moved, but I can feel it. I can feel the lightness. I can feel the opening. You know, I'm breathing. When I breathe deeper. And it's one of the things that I think is the most important for me to communicate to people is, you know, if when they say, what are the three most important things ever? And, you know, the first for me is always about forgiveness, that if you're suffering, it's a resonance of some past experience that's basically reemerging, and it's blocking itself. It's a veil over the present moment. But the second thing I say is breath. Understand that when you saw that word spirit in the Jesus teachings, what he was really talking about were these eternal forces and the most powerful of which was Ruka, the Kudsha, she, that feminine force, the all-embracing breath of God, which is just a way to translate that, and that's activated by our own breath. And when you say that to, like, some sort of dyed-in-the-wool Christians, I always put Christians in quotes because I don't know what that word means anymore, but, you know, those people will feel offended and say, oh my God, that sounds Buddhist or Hindu. Why would he talk about breath? If what he was talking about was breathing, then it would already be there. It, you know, it would have survived through all these translations of translations of translations. And of course, you won't hear them say, and, you know, manipulations and retranslations and belief systems and ideologies and indoctrination. You won't hear that. But people, yeah, they're really looking for the law in the pages of a book, not realizing that the law is in your heart, like it says in the Essene Gospel of Peace. The living law is in everything. It's in nature. It's in your breath. It's in your bone. It's in your bowels. It's in every cell of your body, it says in the Essene Gospel of Peace. But whereas the words on the page, the written word is dead, and it's not saying it's useless, but it's saying that's not where the law lives. The law is the natural aura, the natural presence of our essence, of our own light. And like when you mention that with Tim, when you can hear him breathing when something starts moving, that to me is, I mean, that is the mark of somebody who's doing their work. I was so honored to be there in Woodstock with him like a few months back. And we had the room was packed, and Tim just went somewhere else entirely. I mean, it was amazing because I could feel his energy next to me. And it was almost like he became a grounding rod for me by being so wholly, fully present through his own breath that I was able to really get down into some really deep, deep spaces that really helped communicate with, you know, however many dozen people we had in the room. And that's it. It's like with each of us coming from that space, each of us coming from our own center, it allows those around us, it's a little bit, you know, I don't know if it's easier, but it's a little bit more natural for them to be able to do that. And the more we do this, it will ultimately click over. And I believe it's in the clicking process. I think it's, you know, in two mm-hmm. different private sessions I did this week with both of them, I was telling them that, you know, it. A lot of times when it looks like everything's completely falling apart in appearance, that's usually when we're right in the transition of the final tearing of a veil, right in the middle of a huge quantum or paradigm shift, a huge quantum leap. And I tell them, those are the moments when the rubber really hits the road, that you really pay attention to your breath, that you really practice forgiveness right then and there, even if you're alone in a room, because that is the shift itself. And that's when it is really so important to really live it and not sort of pull the plug out right at the last millisecond. So we got to remember that in culture when it looks like things are sort of not going the way we would like them to remember that. And that's why I love Michael's commitment of, you know, to every mind on the planet. And yet at the same time, you know, he's not, I've never felt that he had some kind of bizarro obsession that you've got to figure out, it's every mind, you can't walk out of this room until, you know, because he's coming from that open light. And I think that's what makes it so beautiful, that we maintain that commitment, but yet at the same time, I really believe that we got to be, you know, not obsessive about needing some kind of result with someone outside of ourselves, because what that's telling us is that we're not living it ourselves.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? And I just
smoke
love...
and mirrors.
Yeah, that
actually, my take would be that it isn't tricky at all. There's no trick to it, no trickiness, zero. We're tricky. Our minds trick us. Our minds play the game that the problem is outside of us. Somebody else made me feel this, and they're going to pay, and we get tricked. There is nothing whatsoever tricky about the law. It's straightforward. It's honest. It's true. It's there for you, the active presence of love. Your human life is absolutely reliable, sweet, and totally there for each of us. It is our minds that get tricked. And if you go back into even the Greek translations that come through, it says, take care of the heart, for out of it are the issues in life. And notice, and I invite everybody, including myself, to answer this question honestly. Notice when you became disturbed in mind or body, what your words and your thoughts went to. Did they go to, oh, out of my heart comes this issue? No. The trickster, your mind said, out of the mouth of my friend, my spouse, my child, my parent, my neighbor, my enemy, that's where the problem is. And now I've been tricked by my own mind. We've got to stop the lie. There is no trickster in the Creator or in the law. It's straight up, reliable, 1,000%.
That gets me thinking of Iktomi and the Lakota philosophies, when they literally say, you know, it's he lives in the shadows of the mind, and it's that recognition of realizing when it's so close, but not quite what Yeshua was saying, which gave us that toll to remove it. But
well, when you get your own carbon-based memory retrained, that when you're in disturbance, you stop and you go, I have an issue in my heart. I have something I need to deal with. I think I'll go in and change the root of my feeling here, instead of, well, if I could just force them to change, I'm feeling this because of something happening outside of me. It is a huge piece of work to retrain your own mind to be your servant instead of the trickster.
And I'll say that in Aramaic. I was going to say in Aramaic, that trickster is that word akyakartza, which is the tempter, the accuser, the resister. It's never outside. It's always with. Always within. Absolutely. Thank you for that calibration.
And the Greeks, they just love to have somebody to blame. The Greek gods want to control everything and everyone. And so everything, literally everything, has been turned backward. That's why people who are brought up with that as their foundation have such a tragedy in their personal code evaluation scores when they start to look honestly at the holes in their mind. Their minds have been shut so full of holes that it literally takes decades to start to get it back on track, to straighten it out and get it back to where it becomes the reliable servant that it was designed to be, instead of the trickster that's always pointing at somebody and something else. And to make of your own instrument, your own body-mind unit, a space for the expression of love instead of the generational expressions of hostility, fear, blame, guilt, rage is a monumental piece of work. And when I look back, I consider an honor and such a privilege for me to have come into Yeshua's Aramaic words and to start to get a glimmer of that and to see just how genius he was. You know, people want to elevate him to something that they don't have to deal with on a daily basis. They make him something apart from themselves rather than the standard to live up to. And what he says is, the things I do, you too can do, and greater. But that's not an easy place to go. And so as one really gets back to that space of, my automatic response is the active presence of love. My automatic response is the active presence of love. Oh, when that terrible thing happened, Michael, what did you do? My automatic response was the active presence of love. Well, when somebody said that awful thing, what did you think? My automatic response is the active presence of love. Well, when that terrible tragedy occurred, what did you do? What did you feel? My automatic response was the active presence of love. Ah, now we've got a human life starting to happen. And it's monumental in this culture. We have been so fooled. We have been so tricked into thinking there's somebody out there that deserves our wrath and that our wrath hurts somebody other than us. We've been so tricked. It's so backwards. It's time to wake up. Jeannie had a comment for us. Mrs. Sweetie? Yes, we have been tricked. Absolutely. And so when our first response to any situation, and that doesn't mean that you don't address situations. It doesn't mean you lay down and you take everything. It doesn't mean you put your head on the chopping block and say, go ahead, whack me with a hammer. That's not what it means. It just means that whatever happens, your first response, your continuous response, your ongoing response is, the first place my mind goes to is the active presence of love. And now I speak about whatever's happening in my world. Can I hold people accountable? Yes. But if I'm not doing it from that automatic response of, the active presence of love, then I'm not human. And if I don't have a human life, really, there's not a whole lot to talk about. Because once that's lost, nothing else matters. You know, the way they said it back in the ancient teachings was, seek first that connection to love. Then everything else gets handled. And everybody's out there trying to handle everything as though the problem's out there. And, you know, they totally forget that there's a connection in here that is the first order business, first law. You keep that condition of rakma in your mind. You keep the active presence of love right there. And we're down to about 2 minutes. So, Dale, why don't you tell us a little bit about your website and what events you've got coming up? You know, we are scheduling Florida. We're pretty much going in, so hopefully we're going to get to do that video on Aramaicisms. You know, maybe take a look at our schedule. We need to do that.
It'll be a good idea to do very soon. Yeah. I'll be at my website, DaleAllenHoffman.com. I'll be in Oswego, Illinois, which is outside of Chicago, next Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, next weekend, not this weekend. We got some big events coming in Asheville, a thing at the Light Center, a thing called Resonate Asheville as well. But also on my website, we've got an offer. You can pre-order my newest, it's a 4-disc CD set called The Primal Voice Transformational Toning, where I really have sort of unlocked everything about toning and bringing a lot more sort of deeper stuff into it. And that's going to be coming out in October. So.
Cool. So DaleAllenHoffman.com. You can find our schedule at yagan.org. And Dale, it sounds like we're going to be up in Chicago at the same time. We're going to be in Woodville.
Are you really?
But the following weekend, starting on Sunday. So
I didn't even think about that. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Wow. You're there. Maybe we could even club the Aramaicisms event somewhere in there. I don't know what your schedule looks like or what ours is, but
I'll get in touch with you. I'll give you a call. I'll look at my schedule and yours and see what we've got in lines. And did Medina work out, Ohio?
No, it turned out that it was just going to be too far to travel. So we're going to catch it next time we're in that direction. So everybody, we appreciate you joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life. Bring a stranger to the show on Monday, Parent-Teacher Talk, and we appreciate you. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie, who present the internal Aramaic process of forgiveness. Michael and Jeannie are here every Monday through Friday on Earth Angels Radio. For more on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.yagan.com. That's www.whyagain.com. Sleep.